I mean, the whole reason I love what I do is just getting more women into the sport. So, I mean, I would love to be known as someone who like got more women involved in powerlifting. It's been really cool to see how many more female competitors not only are just in the sport in general, but how many female competitors like I've kind of like mentored or coached that are now competing. Yeah. Like it's like sometimes when I think about it, I'm like, this is like really freaking cool.
Yeah.
Like how many there are. So,
yeah. So
welcome to the future is female powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I am your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode 74, and we are bringing Miss Brittany Chown with you today. She is a coach coming out of California, Sacramento, Untamed Strength. I had so much fun talking with Brittany. She and I kind of met, not really. We didn't get to really meet and talk at the showdown. I saw her, we connected visually, and we're like, hey, but you know when somebody's competing, you really want to mess with them. That was the kind of feel that we had that day. But Brittany is a coach coming out of, like I said, Sacramento. She's a CSCS. We talk a little bit about her background as far as education and what brought her into powerlifting. It was a really great story. And we actually got to talk about a few questions that we posed on her Instagram. They were some great questions. Let me break them down for you real quick. Question we had was nutrition, staying on routine despite life. I think they were asking like, how do you stay on routine? How did she feel when she got the invite to the showdown? What kind of legacy or impact do you want to leave to the powerlifting community? We also answered some questions about cues that are on repeat during your squat, bench, and deadlift, which I thought was wonderful because we kind of break down the things that we like to use personally with our own clients. And what we do for ourselves too, because it can be a little different, right? Everybody's going to need a little bit different cue. And of course, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And if you are looking for a coach to help you with your powerlifting or strength journey, hit us up, core256.com, and you can read more about what we can do to help you. And remember, if you're listening, take a screenshot of your episode that you're listening to. If you are online, hit me up on Instagram. I love to share when anybody has either wearing something that from the episode or the podcast, or you're sharing the episode itself. Tag me and tag the person you're listening to. They always, you know, love knowing that the episode either helped you or made you feel better, or you know, it educated you in some way. So hit us up, Futures Female Powerlifting on Instagram and on Facebook. If you are on Apple or iPhone, leave us a 5-star review. I always love seeing them when they're on and you guys leave a review. I love to share it on the episode itself. So thank you. If you have left us a review, I truly appreciate it. Now let's get it started with Brittany. Anyways, how's your day going?
Good. I just got done training. It's like a 4-hour training session. So I'm pretty tired, but
holy shit. What did you do today?
I had squats and deadlifts, so it just took a long time.
Like the life out of you?
Yeah.
That's always what happens for me. Like if I squat and especially squat and deadlift, I always feel like death after, and it just takes forever for me to rest.
Yeah, it didn't feel too bad. It was more just like the amount of time it took just to get through it. Everything was, I was there for a long time. So,
well, I saw you with the wagon wheels and
yeah,
that must've been nice. Cause you were saying back to the 500, how does it feel to slap those bad boys on again?
Great. It was great. Yeah. I know it's like crazy, like back into prep soon. So it's just kind of nice to get to kind of acclimate to heavyweight with the wheels a little easier. So
when's the next meet?
February 12th.
Oh, okay. So real soon. Is that the Go Strong?
It's the same weekend. I wanted to do that one, but it's like, that's a big travel, for me. That's like other side of the country, you know? So
yeah, totally.
We're going to stay in California and make it a little easier meet for me.
Yeah, totally. You're in Sacramento area?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I used to live in San Jose, which is not too far.
Yeah.
And I haven't been, we were at Sacramento 2 years ago before COVID hit, my mom and I. And I was like, hey, Sacramento's like totally different now. Like I haven't been there in so long. I was like, it's like so much, there's just so much now. I just so surprised.
I love it. I've only lived here for like 4 years, maybe three or 4 years now. But I love it. I can definitely see myself staying kind of in Sacramento for a long time. I think this is going to be kind of home. Nice. So.
Oh, that's great. I was, you know, whenever I have anybody who's on, especially a coach, I love to kind of just see the background and what you've been up to and how your powerlifting has evolved over the years. And you've been powerlifting. I mean, you've done tons of meets since 2016, which, you know, who knows if you did anything before that just hasn't been documented. But you also have your CSCS, a degree in exercise phys?
Kinesiology. Yeah.
That's me. I'm like, it's kinesiology-ish. And like, same thing. Yeah, they all kind of like circle around each other, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, tell me like, how did you even get into powerlifting? Because you did track in high school. And I wanted to talk about a post that I saw a long time ago where your transformation one. I wanted to touch about that later because I thought that was so powerful because in high school, we always think, you know, oh, I'm so big and I don't want to get too big. Right. And you're 140 pounds. You're super lean, like already super lean in that photo. But what made you go from like track to sort of powerlifting?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I was a track athlete my entire life. Like I started competitive track when I was 9.
Wow.
So I was running. I was mostly a sprinter and a jumper. So I did long jump was my kind of best event, I guess, in track. So that's what ended up, I kind of focused on that in high school. I was really, pretty into track. Like that was my life, you know, was like, I'm going to go to college for track. I wanted to be a head like track coach at a college. Like that was kind of what I wanted to do professionally. So I did end up, running track in college. I got like a small scholarship, which was nice. And did the whole collegiate athlete thing for 4 years. And when they say that like college athletes kind of have this like massive identity crisis, like post like the sport ending, it's so true. I mean, you're just for 13 years, my life was track and field, you know, right. And then my eligibility, you know, ended after my 4 years of competing in college. And I just didn't know what to do anymore. Like I'm such a competitive person and I know like you can still compete in track, like even after college, like pretty much any track meet is considered like an open meet. So anyone can just sign up and do it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I even did a couple after college where I was like unattached. So you don't, you're not competing with a team. You're just, you know, yourself. And I did really like it, but I have arthritis in both feet because of doing 13 years of competitive track and field.
That's crazy. Because,
you know, the shoes we run in are like so not supportive. Like they're like those little spikes, you know, so they're super thin.
Yeah.
And the track at my college actually was pretty bad. They finally resurfaced it my senior year. But the first 3 years, I mean, it was basically like sprinting on concrete.
Yeah.
So I have arthritis in both ankles because of that. And so it just got to a point where running was so painful. I mean, I was having to like take ibuprofen every time I wanted to go for a track workout. And so it just kind of hit me that maybe I'm not going to be able to continue competing in this. Like it's probably just not a great idea. So at the time I wasn't really doing much physically, but I was getting into grad schools. I was kind of like doing that whole thing. And once I was in grad school, I started lifting just because I needed to exercise. But again, running was painful. So I was like, I'd actually gained quite a few pounds post-track, you know, because you go from like working out 4 or 5 hours a day to nothing.
Still eating the same.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the crazy part. I remember my dad even telling me, he's like, you're going to have to learn how to eat because you're so used to eating like as an athlete with like you're practicing 5 hours a day, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I did gain like probably 30 or 40 pounds in my year after track ended. And that takes a little bit of a hit mentally, emotionally, when you're used to being this really skinny, like runner, like we just kind of have that, that body image of just being really small.
Yeah, totally. So like lean and jacked.
Yeah. You're just skinny. I mean, I look back at pictures and I'm like, I was just so skinny, but, but anyway, so it was like, I needed to work out. I was just like, I have to find something else to do because I just didn't like the way that I was feeling and looking. And I started lifting because we had lifted in college as far as like training for track. Like I was a jumper. So we were very much doing like squats and deadlifts and really like power cleans. Like we were doing heavy lifting. And I really did like it. It was more just that I didn't really know how to continue doing it post like having that structure of having our team lifting sessions. So in grad school, I kind of just like fiddled around with it. And I was just like, I'm just gonna like go to the gym and do what feels right. So I would just kind of start doing my squats and deadlifts. I didn't really like benching, so I wasn't doing a whole lot of benching, but mostly just squatting and deadlifting. And at the time in grad school, I was dating a guy who had done like one powerlifting meet. And he was like, hey, you're, you know, for the fact that you haven't even really been training that much, you already have a really strong base because I did it for a few years in college.
Right.
And so he was like, you should just like sign up for a meet and see how it goes. So I was like, okay, like I liked the idea of competing in something again, you know, very competitive person. So I was like, this sounds great. I just have to lift and I can maybe win something cool.
Yeah.
But it was so exciting to me. And yeah, I mean, I just fell in love with it. The first meet, I was just like, okay, this is awesome. So yeah, it just kind of just went out of control from there. Right.
That's so
you start
crazy.
Just signing up for like every meet.
Yeah.
I think I did like 3 meets probably within just like a few months.
Yeah.
You know,
so typical.
Wanting to do it.
This one's good. I'm ready. I'm going to be stronger.
Yeah.
And you probably were stronger every single time at that time.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think I added like 250 pounds to my total in the first like 2 years.
Oh
I
my
mean,
gosh. Just, well, your like, first meet, I think you squatted 225 or it would, I think you opened at 225.
It was 265, I think.
I think you finished at 265, but then it was like 315 was your next one. Like you had opened at 315. I remember looking, I'm like, oh, that's a big jump, like from one meet to the next.
Oh, yeah. I think there might have been a meet that didn't get logged on open powerlifting. So I think my next meet, I think my best was 280 something. Okay. And then it was like into the 300s after that.
That's awesome. But, so did you finish grad school?
Yes.
Okay. So right now your master's in what is it? In kinesiology?
Exercise science. Yeah.
Okay.
So my undergrad was kinesiology and then master's was exercise science.
So you just went all in. So you were like, let's do this.
Well, again, so my career path, right, was I want to be a collegiate track and field coach and you have to have a master's. Like most of the programs, it's a requirement. And so that's why I went to grad school was I was like, well, if I want my dream job, right, I have to get my master's. And funny enough is that I ended up getting my dream job and I was an assistant coach for track at the school that I was the grad school I was going to. And I hated it.
No way.
I hated it. It was just one of those moments where you're like, this is my dream. Why don't I like it?
So what didn't you like about it?
It was so much more administrative stuff than I realized. Like I loved being out on the track coaching my girls. I loved the actual like running the workouts and doing the technique work. Like I love doing like technique work with sprinting. I think it's so interesting. Like most people just have a really hard time, I think, like really learning how to sprint like mechanically sound, you know?
Yeah.
So I really loved that part of it. The problem was that was probably only like 20% of the job, you know? So then it's like all the background work with the NCAA with like eligibility stuff and recruiting, mm-hmm. Just a lot of that kind of stuff that I was like, okay, I don't really like doing this. And then it doesn't help that like the pay is pretty bad.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, this would have like, I had like the fact that I had to go through so much school for this job. And then it's like, the pay is not even great. Like a lot of collegiate coaches have other jobs too. Like yeah. They can't support themselves on just the, like, unless you're like head coach at like a top D1 school, but right. That's going to take 20, 30 years to work your way up to that.
You know? I think that's very interesting because my husband at one point thought that he wanted to do something like that, even just being a strength coach at a school.
Yeah.
And there is so much politics with mm-hmm. being like a strength coach and trying to work with different sports and mm-hmm. how they have to work with each other. But a lot of times the strength coach is not looked at in the way that they should be. And then, you know, there's so much, there's a lot of politics to it. So it was funny because as he kind of got deeper into that, we both realized, I'm like, that kind of sucks. I don't think I want that job. Like seems like on the surface, like, oh, that's a great job. But you just don't know, I guess. And that's good that you took an assistant job. So you just realized like, I am not going to do this.
Yeah. So, and actually at the same time, I was also interning, as a strength coach at the college too. Cause then that was the other thing. I was like, okay, well, maybe I don't like the like track coach position, but maybe I could work something with like strength and conditioning. Cause at that time I had really, you know, fallen in love with powerlifting. So I was like, maybe this is more the avenue I want to go. And then, yeah, same thing. It was like, okay, pay is really bad. You're only getting paid really well as a strength coach. If you're like the head strength coach of a really like big school. So it just, it was this wake up call of like, it's going to take me 20 years to work my way up to that. And I have student loans that I need to start paying back. I was like, I can't be working minimum wage like trying to pay these loans back. So yeah, it was just kind of a reality check of just like, sometimes these things we think are going to be everything we want, it just doesn't work out. And I mean, luckily that's kind of what led me into coaching powerlifting. I mean, it was, I already knew I wanted to coach. I already knew I was good at coaching. It was just, I needed to find a new way to do it and actually be able to support myself, doing it. So,
right. So what was the first steps of that?
So out of grad school, I applied to probably like 30 jobs trying to get like a entry-level strength and conditioning coach job. Cause I had just been interning at my school. And I only got one interview out of like 30 that I applied for. Cause again, it's also not to mention like being a strength and conditioning coach at a college is an extremely competitive job. Yeah. There's so many people who want that job. And I do feel like being a woman is kind of you kind of get overlooked because a lot of the positions are going to be for like the male sports teams and they just don't necessarily want a female strength coach, which sucks. And I'm hoping, I do think that is changing, but
yep.
So it was kind of one of those things. I was like, okay, I'm not getting called back for any of these jobs, but I need to work. Right.
Yeah.
And actually what was more of a concern on my mind was I need somewhere to lift because I wasn't at my school anymore. Right. I had graduated, so I couldn't use the school gym anymore. It was like a ridiculous amount to like pay for it. So I'm like, okay, I really need a job, but I also need to find a gym. And so I walked into like a Crunch one day after I graduated, just cause I knew they were doing like a week, like free trial. And I was like, sweet, I can lift for free for a week. like that was my thought process.
This is a college student just out of college. I know that feeling.
Oh, yeah. So broke, yep. So poor. Wanted a free gym membership for a week. So I went into a Crunch and was just like doing my normal powerlifting training. And one of the trainers there actually saw me lifting and was like, wow, you're really strong. Are you a personal trainer? And I was like, I mean, I have I have a lot of degrees and stuff, but I don't have like a, you know, certification for personal training. And they were like, that's okay. We need trainers. And then literally I got like hired on the spot.
It's like, I have a master's degree.
is that okay?
Is that okay? I mean, I didn't do the weekend course for.
Yeah. So I ended up like taking a really quick online personal training certification, just something to like, check the box.
Yep, totally.
And got hired like, I mean, literally within a couple days.
That's so crazy.
So then I was working as a personal trainer and I was like, okay, this will pay the bills for a little bit while I like figure out what I'm going to do.
Right.
And then, I mean, it really just took off from there. I really fell in love with like training people. Specifically, I was working with a lot of women at that gym who had never lifted before. So it was really cool to get to like introduce women who came to me for like, oh, I want to lose weight. And I was like, okay, you know, like here, let's get you on a program and everything. And then they end up being like, oh, I really like lifting. This is fun. Yeah. And I'm like, yes. Like yes. That was such a cool, like it was such a cool experience working in just like a general population gym and getting to kind of show the world of lifting to people who maybe had only done like cardio and maybe some machines. So
I think people overlook that a lot. Like, you know, like when people have asked me like, hey, what should I do? You know, I want to get into powerlifting or coaching for powerlifting personal training. I was like, you should work at a gym, like a Globo gym. You learn a lot. Wow. And those kind of experiences can help you. But exactly that, right? Because you are lifting heavy weights. You don't look manly, right? Which is these sort of thoughts that women have when they come in and they think of that. And you get to share the love of lifting heavy to the general population.
Yeah, it was actually, it's funny you said that because there was a couple times where, you know, kind of in like an initial consultation with like a potential client, you kind of ask them what their goals are and what they're looking for. And I remember specifically one of the women I asked that, she said, she's like, I'd love to look like you. Like you look so good, but she's like, I've just always been afraid of, like lifting heavy. And I'm like, well, that's what I do. Like I lift weights. That's why I look like this, you know? And she was like, wait, really? Like that's just from like lifting. And I'm like, yeah, like, I don't know why people think they're just going to turn into like a shredded bodybuilder the second they like touch a weight, you know?
Yeah. So it's good that more and more women like yourself, like me, like, you know, that are out there showing different body types. And I always say like, you know, I've been trying to look more manly for the last 12 years. This is the most I got.
Yeah. I'm like, you don't understand. I've been trying, like I've been trying to look really muscular. So
that always makes me laugh.
Like it's not just going to happen overnight. Don't worry.
Yeah, totally. So now that's your 9 to 5, right? Like you are just coaching. That's your job right now. And that's all you're doing.
I do some in-person personal training, still more, a little bit more limited on that. I would say the bulk of what I do is like the online, you know, remote coaching, programming for people. And then I do also teach at a small, it's called the National Personal Training Institute. We have one in Sacramento. It's a very small school. And we help get people certified. So I teach like NASM curriculum.
Yeah, that's great.
Certified. But it's awesome because instead of just doing NASM's like online course, we actually have a gym and we teach them all the right movements. We demonstrate everything. We teach them how to identify breakdowns and lifts. So it's really fun. I get to like really make sure that, you know, personal trainers that are kind of up and coming know what they're doing and they're not just going to like take some online course and have no idea.
Which is what happens. Doing. Like I didn't have any of that available when I first started being a personal trainer where I could, there was, cause I was living in Missouri and you could drive to St. Louis and they would have something like that for the weekend. Mm-hmm. But normally, yeah, it's not like that. You are filling out something, you're driving somewhere, you're taking some tests and then you're coming back, but there is no instructional one-on-one, no hands-on of nothing. And to me, that's very powerful that you get to do it too, because how many powerlifting coaches are going to be able to give that sort of input and that sort of experience? I highly doubt there's a lot of those.
Yeah. So it's really rewarding getting to, just help people who want to get into the fitness world and into that industry and kind of, teach them. I mean, I have my biases, right, with like powerlifting. So it's a little hard sometimes because NASM curriculum, I do tend to like stray away from it a little bit here and there with the way I want to teach them.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I make sure they're going to pass the test.
Right.
But then it's exciting because I get to be the one that's really kind of teaching them like, okay, it's okay if your knees go over your toes when you squat, right? Because NASM still is very like, they should really sit back onto their heels in the squat. And I'm like, no, like, don't listen to that. You know, yeah.
So there's some variety that
I think that's the my favorite part is that if someone just takes this online, they're just taking the word for what it is.
Yeah.
And then they're going out into the world to start teaching it. Whereas I get to be the one that says, hey, kind of question these things. Like, there's no one way to squat, right? There's no one way to bench. Like, everyone's going to look different, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's pretty fun to do that job. It's nice, 'cause it's just like a night class. So it's just like a few hours a night I get to go over there and teach. So it doesn't interfere much with my own training. And
to me, those kind of things are important too, because that, like, as a coach, that probably helps you have to reiterate things over and over and find different ways to make it stick, right? Because some of them are probably like, I don't get it, I don't understand what you mean. And then you're going to have to like, well, like, da 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 da. Because I think that would just sharpen, you know, your tool as a coach, being able to reiterate things differently.
Yeah. I mean, I think the coolest part about it is a lot of the people who do this class, they have very little education background in like anatomy, physiology, kinesiology. Like, they just have very little understanding. So I'm having to learn how to like teach the basics to someone who has literally zero, like they're starting at level zero. Right. So it can be really challenging to try to teach concepts that are a little bit more challenging to this world. You do have to learn different ways to teach something, and that does make you a better coach, because obviously not every client is going to understand something the same way. You have to find a million different ways to say the same thing. So
I did want to talk about that post, and I think that one in particular hit home recently, because I was talking to somebody who is a new lifter, and they realize that they are one of the heavier people. They saw the roster, right? So they see the rosters, they're in the 181, and they realize that they are one of the heavier people, and they didn't expect to be so taken off guard about feeling heavier, you know, because they're normally in a lighter weight. Anyways, she couldn't wrap her mind around it. She was like, I know I shouldn't be, but I feel like I'm worried about it, and I'm thinking about it, and I shouldn't be, like, you know. And so I had this conversation with her, and it was brief. And I just so happened to see your post, and I'm like, wow, that's exactly it. And I think that we've all sort of had that, many of us, where we're in our mind thinking like, this is where I walk at. And especially somebody like you who was skinny, you know, like a track is like, there's a body shape for track. You know what I mean? And that post was you being 140 and you being 190, and the second one where you look fantastic. I mean, you're showing your midriff, you know, you look amazing still, but you said you had to sort of get used to being 190. Can you tell me a little bit about that post and where maybe your mindset was with that?
Yeah. So it kind of goes into the fact that we all have these weird emotional attachments to the number on the scale, right? Yeah. Like, I remember so vividly, and there's just should be no reason that this should be such a vivid memory in my mind. But the first time I saw 150 on the scale, I mean, I wanted to cry. I was just like, how do I weigh 150? 'Cause, you know, my whole high school track, college track, I was in the 130s, 140s. And so I remember seeing that number and just having such an emotional reaction to it.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those weird things. Like, why? Like, why do we do that? And then I remember the same thing happening when I hit 170. 'Cause again, I told you I kind of gained some weight after I quit running track. And so it just kind of slowly was creeping up. And I remember same thing. I hit 170 and I was just like, what is wrong with me? You know, there's just this like emotional reaction to it of like, I'm not worth as much as I was when I was 130 pounds. Like, I'm not as pretty, or whatever it is you want to think in your head, right? You kind of go down these weird spirals. And honestly, powerlifting completely shifted me out of that. It was like, yeah, it took a while. The first few years of powerlifting, there was definitely a struggle for me with what weight class and trying to like stay really small. But once I finally broke out of that and started competing in the 181 class and like seeing how much stronger I was, because I'm tall. I'm 5'9". So I'm a pretty tall person. So for me, like as I've gained weight, I've gotten stronger because my leverages are just improving.
Yeah.
And that to me made all the difference. It was like, who cares what this number is? Like, I feel so good right now.
Yeah.
Like I feel strong. I don't look at the mirror and think what, like maybe some days everyone has their bad kind of body image day, but for the most part, it's like, I feel so good at this weight. Why was I so freaked out? Like, why was I so scared of gaining weight? Like, it just makes no sense to me. And I think in the post, I kind of said something about like, I know I'm going to hit 200 pounds eventually.
Yeah.
I know what I will at this point with how much my strength has been improving. It's not unreasonable to think I'll probably grow into the 198s within the next couple years. I know I'll probably start seeing 200 pounds regularly. I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I know that it's probably coming and I've accepted it already. Like I haven't even seen that number on the scale.
Yeah.
But I've already like mentally I've accepted it. Like I know that that's coming and I know it's okay. And so kind of sharing that journey of like, it's not immediate. Not everyone's just born with this like ability to kind of detach themselves from that number. It just took a lot of practice of like kind of rewiring the way I thought about what my weight was.
Yes.
You know, it had nothing to do with who I am as a person, you know, and learning that it for me, the only reason I even keep track of my weight is just for weight class purposes. Like,
yeah,
I think it was like around sometime last year, I did a thing where I didn't weigh myself for like 2 months, just to kind of, again, it was more so like, I don't need to know this right now. I think I was far out from a competition and I was like, I just want to enjoy my life and not be so wrapped up in those numbers. And it was such a good experience. I think at the end of it, I did weigh like 193 or something. And it wasn't even like scary to me. It was like, I had a really great couple months. I think it was around the holidays last year. So I was like eating food and going out and I was like, I don't care anymore like what that number is. So it was a really kind of empowering thing. And yeah, just accepting the fact that these numbers that used to be really scary, like they just don't have to be, like, especially if you're getting stronger and you're feeling better.
Yeah.
Like what's it matter what that number is, you know?
Yeah. So and you, I mean, you're healthy too. I mean, that we should probably point that out. It's not like, I think there's sometimes where people are like, well, you know, you don't want to be too fat or whatever and have too much extra fat, you know, on the body. And I can understand something like that, right? Like there's got to be a balance.
There's always going to be health risks with gaining weight. And I think as long as if you're getting blood work done or you're going to your doctor and talking about it, as long as there's no glaring, like, right. I mean, if I was to be having some crazy cholesterol numbers or some crazy blood pressure, maybe I'd think like, okay, yeah, maybe I need to like work my way back down. Cause it doesn't even like muscle or fat, like just having more mass on a frame, it can be challenging to your health. And I think that is something that people tend to overlook.
Yeah.
So yeah, as long as, you know, you're comfortable with the weight and you feel good and you're healthy and you're not, you know, putting your health at risk or putting yourself in danger. I mean, what's it matter what that number is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny because women are, you know, usually this is a conversation with a lot of women where we are okay. We're going to try to be better with gaining weight. Whereas like you get to the men and they are like, I need to gain all the weight possible. You know, a lot of the bigger guys, if they're in that mid area, they're trying to put on a lot of weight at the sacrifice of their health often, you know, where it's like, you know, they'll just run all the gear and run, you know, they'll take those risks where I think women are going to think a little bit more about that and the acceptance at each point. I think, you know, it's funny that you talk about really remembering 150 because when I hit, I had torn my ACL playing basketball when I was in my early 20s and I stopped playing basketball. I stopped dancing Tahitian. I used to compete in Tahitian dancing and stopped all of that, almost like the same thing, right? But I kept eating the same. I was like 20, maybe 21 and I gained so much weight And I remember stepping on the scale at 24-Hour Fitness in Hawaii, and I was 142. And in my mind, I was like, holy shit. I have never, ever, ever been in the 40s. I cannot believe I'm 142 right now. Because like prior to that, I was always like 115, 120, you know, like right out of high school. And now it's like that's where I normally carry myself at, is around that weight. And it's so funny how I've gone through so many transitions of feeling a certain way and then realizing that that number is really not reflective of how I feel now, because I'm that weight now, but I feel great. And then I wasn't. I felt like, I mean, I was inactive. I smoked all the time. I drank a lot. I was, you know, I didn't feel good overall. Yeah. So that in my mind, that number was associated with my health at the moment. But now it's like I can take that away and realize, yeah, I feel fantastic. I feel strong. And I think that's super important, rewiring your brain like you were talking about. All right. So some of the questions that we did, and I was telling Brittany, normally I do a Q&A longer, but she's really popular. So we got questions, even though it was like a 30-minute window, like people are like, yes. So the first question that we have is from DT Lifts Weights. And she said, how did you feel when you got the showdown invite?
Yeah, I was shocked. I mean, I'm just going to say that.
You're so stinking strong.
Yeah, but okay, so in my head, I'm in this weird middle ground. Like, I'm kind of like stronger than doing a lot of just like local level meets, right? Like, but then I feel like a lot of these really big money meets, I'm not in the money, right? I'm nowhere near fighting for like, you know, those spots.
Right.
And so I'm in this just weird middle ground, and it's just like, I don't know. I was so excited to get that invite because it was just kind of like, it was really a, what's the word?
Validation.
Just like a validation. Yeah. That, I mean, I really am kind of getting into this elite level now with powerlifting. Cause I mean, I've been doing this 6 years now. I've been training almost 7 years, you know, and it's hard to see sometimes that people they just start and within 2-3 years they're getting invites to these big meets. And I've been working at this for so long. And yeah, to finally start getting some of these invites, it's so cool. Even though I know I'm like, it's like I want to go to some of these here and there, even though I know it's like, okay, I'm not making any huge, like, I'm not making money. I'm not going to win my class even.
Yeah. Right. You know? Right.
Just being there, getting the opportunity to share the platform with these women. I mean, like, the showdown was one of the best experiences of my life. Like, I mean, I got to see Tamara's pole. I was right there. Like, I was sitting right next to her, you know, like seeing that world record pole. And it was just, I don't know. It's amazing to get to be there and to not just be there as a spectator, but be there as a competitor. I mean, it's just so, so cool.
And you look so collected, like, for that being maybe one of the bigger meets you've done. Like,
oh, that was for sure the biggest meet I've ever done.
It was hype. Like, you know, the whole event was, it wasn't like overly crazy, but it's like you feel the energy of all the competitors and you look composed. Oh, yeah. I mean, you looked great. I loved watching you compete. And I hope to see you get invited to more of these. I know they're costly, you know, like we are definitely, we're paying money for most of these things. We're not really in the running to win money. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to go to more. So I did get invited to the hybrid, but I'm not doing it. Just again, it's in Miami. That's other side of the country for me. So yeah. I can't really afford to do these big traveling meets like multiple times a year. So I've been kind of telling myself like maybe we'll do one kind of big one a year and then, you know, one or two smaller local or like local-ish, like more California meets. But yeah, I think the craziest part for me is just like being a drug tested lifter, like competing more in the drug tested world and getting that invite. It was a lot of validation just that I can still show up and compete with these women.
Yeah.
And that's been my goal from day one. Like, I mean, I've probably told this story a million times on to other people, but one of the first kind of mentors I had in like the strength and conditioning world, I remember I told him, I was like, I really want to eventually pull like 500 pounds. Like, how cool would that be? Right. Like, it was like this long-term dream of mine. And he straight up looked at me and was like, that's impossible. You'll never pull that unless you do steroids. Like, he just straight up flat face was like, it's impossible. You'll never do it. And the day I pulled 500 pounds, I just was like, all I could see was his face telling me that. And I was just like, yes, I did it. You know, just like, so yeah, getting to finally like having worked my way up to this and like getting to some of these meets, it's just, it's so cool to kind of prove like, hey, look, you don't have to do these things to make it like to a higher level. You don't have to, you totally can. And it's 100% an individual choice, but you should never feel like you have to, you know, like that's always kind of been my thing is it's the right choice for some people. And for some people it's not, and that's okay. You know, and that's not going to limit your competitive like abilities necessarily. So.
Totally. And I agree. I think it's always, because I'm a drug tested athlete and I love seeing that too, because of that reason. It's like, you know, it's my personal choice to not do it. But, you know, my whole life, it's like, if you're in powerlifting, you'd be naive to think that, you know, one is better than the other. When it comes to that, it's like, it's just a choice. And if you're in powerlifting, they either do or you don't. And that it is what it is. Like, to me, I've never been one that was like, oh, well, I'm drug tested and blah, blah. You know, like I've never, there are some people who are like that, but I'm just like, oh, you guys are so like cringy. But I loved it. Like you and, I forgot her name. She was a USAPL lifter.
Julia?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, and it, so it was kind of cool to see that, but yeah, I could totally see that being like a validation and being something so exciting to be at. All right. Next question from the dreaded lifter. I like that. I wonder if she has dreads. Nutrition, staying on routine despite life. So I'm assuming that she's saying like, how do you stay on routine despite life?
So I'm probably not the best person for this question.
As she just said, she took off 2 months of weighing herself and ate everything.
I have never enjoyed tracking my food. Yeah. I have never enjoyed tracking every little thing that I eat. I know some people, it really helps and it's a way for them to have kind of routine and like it allows them to kind of control it. I've always done pretty well just as like an intuitive eater. And I know not, again, it's more that I recognize not everybody has the ability to do that. Not everyone has the ability to kind of stay, you know, working towards their goals while eating more just intuitively.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess for me, it's like, I prioritize protein. So no matter what, even if I'm out of town and I'm not going to say no to going out to eat. I'm going to eat what I want, you know. Yes. I'm going to enjoy it. But I mean, throughout the day, I am going to just be making decisions of, okay, I just need to make sure I'm getting my protein in. As long as I'm getting protein in at every meal, I don't really care what I'm eating, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bad thing.
No, but I don't think so. I think that's a good tool. Like, because what happens, right? We usually, that goes away and carbs and fat are up and center. So I think that's actually a good one.
Yeah, I think that's always, I mean, maybe not always, but over the last couple of years, I've gotten way more aware of it and just like keep your protein intake high. And as long as you're doing that, I mean, for me, everything else is going to kind of fall in place. Obviously, when I'm really close to a meet and I'm having to cut a little bit, just because I don't like doing huge water cuts. Yeah. I try to limit myself to like only a 7 to 8 pound water cut at, you know, the absolute most.
Yeah.
So sometimes I will have to diet a little bit just to like maybe get a couple pounds within reach. And even in those instances, I'm not usually tracking. It's more just like smaller portions. So I just kind of making those decisions of like, I'm still eating what I want, but I'm just going to be more aware of like, okay, I don't need to eat as much and just kind of keep it smaller portions throughout the day. But again, I mean, I'm just not the best person for this because I don't have like, I don't think I've tracked my food since I was trying to cut weight my very first like powerlifting meets like 6 years ago. So
it's probably better. I mean, I tell people like tracking can be a tool, but it is so daunting. It's so disrupting in your life that it's something you can't do that long term.
You shouldn't do it long term. I mean, I think luckily because the background I have and with the education I have a very, I've taken, you know, grad level classes on nutrition. I know I can eyeball food and I know about what's in it. I know if it's a good source of carbs, fats, proteins, whatever it is. Right. So I can kind of go about my day making decisions that are, they're educated decisions. It's not that I don't know what I'm eating. It's just that I'm not having to spend the time tracking everything.
Yeah.
So for me mentally, I like to just enjoy my food. Anyone who follows me on Instagram knows I enjoy my food. I'm constantly posting pictures of my goodies. I have a huge sweet tooth.
Yeah.
So I have to find my way to have my fun dessert every day.
Listen, I live with like a chef. I swear my husband's going down the chef route and he cooks things all the time. I'm always posting it. I'm very spoiled, but, like for me, I would say that one thing I learned a long time ago, I use precision nutrition as part of my nutrition coaching and some of the habits, which seems so like duh, are ones that help me kind of manage my weight without sacrificing food, right? So things like slowing down when I eat and then eating till I'm satisfied versus till I'm full. Cause then you know, it's intuitive in the sense that now you're just eating till you feel good and not like a heifer. I'll totally, if I'm not paying attention, I will totally eat too much and feel awful. So for me, that's how I'm able to kind of like manage my nutrition through life, because then I have three kids, you know, they ain't going to eat everything I eat and, they still have to try. but you know, we're able to kind of get food that's maybe kid friendly and, you know, protein, but without, having to sacrifice a lot of, you know, like, okay, we're all going to eat chicken and broccoli today. Like that's definitely not happening. So that's my way of kind of being able to moderate through life. But it's like establishing these habits, right? That are like, okay, I know that I'm going to have protein at every meal. And if I do that, I'm probably going to limit the amount of carbohydrates and other stuff I have because I'm prioritizing protein.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big one. All right. Your next one. Oh, I love this one. This one is from Katie Quite Contrary. I probably said that wrong. Sorry, Katie. What are the cues that are on repeat during your squat, bench, and deadlift? So maybe let's start off with squat. What are some cues that are on repeat when you're squatting, or maybe things that you tell your clients?
Yeah. So I would say the biggest one for me, lately has been literally all I tell myself is back into the bar. I just throw my upper back into the bar and that immediately puts me into like thoracic extension.
Yeah.
And some people you have to say chest up or you say shoulders down, you know, there's a million different ways you can say it, but back into the bar, has been the best one for me. I tend to, if I fail a squat, it's because right? Like I just fold forward.
Yeah. So you're talking about out of the hole, or are you telling you're like back?
I'm thinking the whole time,
right.
But for sure out of the hole, like I need to throw my upper back into that bar so that I'm continuing to go up and back and not allowing my chest to collapse and like roll forward.
Yep.
Totally. So that's been the biggest one for my squat. And I do have, that's one I say to a lot of clients too. And then I would say the other one for clients that I have to say a lot is I'll just say big toe, like just dig your big toe into the ground. Cause I actually just made a reel about this, but it's one of those really common things that people just still want to push through their heels on the squat. I remember I was taught that way. I was taught to squat through your heels. That was like a common thing I remember hearing when I first started learning. And I think a lot of people were taught that. So having to get rid of those habits sometimes and be like, no, you need to push through your toes too. You need to push through that big toe.
I think that reel was fabulous because it really shows what happens when you sit back on the heel, right? So the knees shoot back, butt goes up. And we always, and that is it, probably the number one thing I see when people are starting to learn how to squat right. You know, his knees always shoot back, but that's it. Grounding the toe, big toe, big toe. And then you'll have more even distribution over the foot.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, what about the bench? What are some cues that are going through?
So I recently changed a lot about my bench, which is the reason why I finally am benching in the 200s. Bench has just been my nemesis the entire time I've been powerlifting. I got those long deadlift arms, yeah. You know, so bench can be frustrating. But anyway, so I've actually started using Bulldog grip, for my bench. And it's made a huge difference. Basically, the change that I made was I used to be someone who overly like tucked their elbows, in the bench, and I have a wide grip because I have such long arms. And so it was causing me to flare my elbows off my chest, like after the press. So I was always losing it. So I would flare my elbows and then the bar would fall back towards my face. So I switched to Bulldog grip, and now all I'm thinking is start in more of a flared position.
Yeah.
That way there's nowhere for them to go. They're already flared.
Right.
My bench shot up. I mean, it just shot up. I went from struggling for singles at 185 to hitting 215. So, I mean, it made a huge difference. And again,
That's crazy.
With my long arms and just, again, really wanting to flare, I just kind of leaned into it. I was like, clearly that's where my body wants to be. Let's go into it in that position. Let's bring the bar down in more of a flare.
And you're probably one of the few people I know who benches like that. I had interviewed Jen Thompson, who also benches like that, very straight across the chest. And Marissa Enda is also very straight. And we had talked about that. And I think that also kind of like the heels sitting back is some verbiage that has been perpetuated, right? And probably had its place at some point. But also tuck the elbows has been another one that probably has been overused. And then we overly tuck. So when should you not tuck is like that? And this is a perfect example where it took you years to kind of like be like, all right, let's just let them go where they go. And now look at that.
I think it's one of those things I just always thought that it was wrong. Like it was wrong if I started more flared, that just was like not how you're supposed to bench. But again, realizing that there's a million ways to bench. Right. I mean, depending on the grip, your arm length, how much you can arch, your rib cage structure. I mean, there's just a million variables, right? Like there's just so many things that can change the way your bench is going to look. So that's been a big one for me. It's just, all right, we're starting in a flare, boom, like that. That's made all the difference. I would say a big one I use for all of my clients is like kick the floor away.
That's a good
one. To help keep their butt from coming off the bench. A lot of people tend to just push their feet directly like down into the ground, and their butt, you know, will pop off. So thinking more about kicking the floor away from you, has been a good cue for a lot of my clients, with getting better leg drive, more effective leg drive, and not having their butt come off the bench, which, you know, you're going to get a red light. So doesn't matter how well the bench went, it got red lights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I've never heard of the kick. I love that because I always say drive back, but pretty much you just, if you say kick, it gives like a better, same thing. And this is like always important, right? Like we need more tools, more ways to get the same message across. So, you know, this is, we're saying the same thing, but we're just saying it in different ways. I think one for me for bench is reach. So I always reaching with the chest. I teach a lot of new people. And so that's always collapsing, you know? And so when it's coming down, I tell people, as you bring that bar, you're sort of bringing your body, reaching the chest up to that bar. So I always tell them reach. And if they do that, they keep that nice and steady and up. Yeah. Okay. What about deadlift? What are some cues that go in through your brain during deadlift? I know I got a lot.
So I'm a sumo puller.
Gorgeous sumo puller, by the way, like amazing.
I have worked so hard.
It's a great pull.
Oh, I all I wanted was to have just like a really pretty sumo. That's all I wanted. So I'm happy that people think that it's pretty. So, for me, I would say more recently, the cue that I've been using, has been just like external rotation in my shoulders. So there's not like a really simple cue for that always, but I just kind of think about like rotating my shoulder as I'm starting the pull. And which inherently is like bringing my chest up and my getting a little more thoracic extension. Because again, when I fail a sumo, it's because I was able to get it off the ground, but my chest position was trash and I couldn't lock it out because I was like rolling forward, you know? Right. So that's whenever I see that in a lifter, it's usually just like, all right, in your starting position off the floor, you need to have good thoracic extension. We need those shoulders externally rotated. We want to have the chest in a really like proud position, right?
That's a good way of saying it.
Yeah. So that it's not collapsing and your shoulders are internally rotating and the bar is just going to go right back down to the ground. So,
right.
So that's been really helpful for me. That's been a big one. And then the cue I use the most for sumo, especially for beginners, is spread the floor. That one's very common for sumo, but again, it's very, I think, especially if someone has started deadlifting conventional, right? And then they switch to sumo, they still are trying to push their feet straight through the ground. And they don't really know how to get that like diagonal kind of force going out to the sides.
Yeah.
And so spread the floor is a really great cue that kind of is like, I've even gotten like a big piece of paper and had someone stand on it and like try to think about like ripping it apart. I was like, that's all you're doing. Like, right. You're trying to like tear the floor in half, whatever you have to envision, you know?
Yeah.
So that's always a cue coming out of my mouth to my clients who pull sumo.
Yeah, for sure. I think one that is a hit or miss with me sometimes is protect the armpits. So imagine somebody tickling your armpits, right? And we sort of mimic that external rotation or that locking back and the arms are nice and long. So I say protect your armpits and you're like, boop, and you suck it back a little bit.
So I usually say long arms. Just make your arms as long as you can. That's another one that works pretty well for people.
Okay. So our last question, semi-last, because we got one more after that. What kind of legacy or impact do you want to leave in the powerlifting community?
That's such a like heavy.
It is.
It is. Realistically, the whole reason I love what I do is just getting more women into the sport. So, I mean, I would love to be known as someone who like really helped bring more women into the sport. My coaching roster is mostly women. I mean, I do coach a couple male athletes, but I mean, I'm probably like 80% coaching women, which is pretty common for female coaches. I mean, I know again, there's that kind of weird, not a lot of males like to hire a female coach. And I know that there's some weird internalized things going on there, but whenever I show up to meets, I usually have like my crew of like female competitors that I'm coaching, you know, and I would love to be known as someone who like got more women involved in powerlifting. Cause, again, my very first meet, there must've only been like 8 or 9 female competitors. And this meet was huge. I mean, this was like 100 people were in this meet at my first meet.
Damn. And only 8 or 9. And
yes.
Wow.
It was almost entirely men. And so it was such a like, man, why are there not more women doing this? Like that was kind of going through my head. Like, why are there so many dudes here, you know? And so it's been really cool to see how many more female competitors not only are just in the sport in general, but how many female competitors like I've kind of like mentored or coached that are now competing. Yeah. Like it's like sometimes when I think about it, I'm like, this is like really freaking cool.
Yeah.
Like how many there are. So
yeah. No, totally. I think that's amazing legacy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like that's the main one I can think of. I think that would be cool to like be known for. So yeah.
Well, I feel like you're just starting out. Like, even though you've been doing it for 7 years, like, I feel like now it's like really the ball's rolling and only going to go up from here, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So this is the part of the show where I ask everybody,
what the hell is wrong with you people?
What the hell was I thinking? Where you think back to a time that you're like, wow, why the fuck did I do that? And it could be in powerlifting. It doesn't have to be, but it's always funny when it is. Can you think of something? What the hell was I thinking?
Oh yeah. I've been listening to this show since day one. Like this podcast, you know, since it came out years ago. So I knew this question was coming.
Yes.
And I purposefully glossed over this when I talked about my first meet because I didn't want to spoil it for this. So my very first meet, I cut weight to compete as a 165, right? Because I was 170 and I was like, I hate this number. I can't believe, I don't want people to know that I weigh 170. You know what I mean? Like, it's just horrible thoughts going through my head. So I cut weight. I ended up weighing in at like 158.
Wow.
It wasn't really a water cut. I did like a pretty hardcore, like, calorie deficit for like the few weeks leading up to the meet. Like, I straight up was like, I'm not gonna weigh in the, I was even like, I don't even want to weigh in the 160s, right? Like, I was so freaked out about people knowing that I weighed in the 160s or I weighed in the 170s, right? So I weighed in at 158 at my first meet. Again, I'm 5'9", I'm a tall person, and after my first meet I wanted to compete in the 148 class. That was my goal. I was like, I'm gonna be a 148 lifter. That's the right class for me. And again, looking back, it's like, what the fuck?
Yes. That's 30 pounds lighter. I can't even imagine 30 pounds lighter than what you are now, because you look so fit now. Like, I would imagine 30 pounds would be crazy.
I mean, I've built a lot of muscle since then too. So again, but I don't know. I just remember telling people that I was going to try to be a 148 lifter, and then just being like, as I eventually, you know, I really shouldn't even have, I was a 165 competitor for 3 years. My first 3 years of this sport, I was competing in the 165s, and I was so small, and I just refused to let myself go up. And that's another, what was I thinking, was why did I try to hang on to that class for so long?
Right.
Why did I want to go down another class? And why did I think that I needed to stay in the 165s forever? So once I went up to 181, I mean, my total instantly just shot up, because it was like, oh yeah, my leverages are way better.
Yeah, right.
As a 181 lifter.
So, that's crazy.
I look back at that. Sometimes that post will pop up like on my memories or something on Instagram of like my weigh-in post for that first meet. And I'm just like, oh no.
That is a good lesson though, right? It's like, and you get to share that today. And that's a perfect example we're talking about with, you know, the lady that I know. And we have these weird like associations with weight and a number for us. Like there is just something about that number, or as the number increases, that we just won't let go of. It is a process to be okay with that. And I think that's where we have to look at other things that are good markers, like your strength went up, right? There's all these other things that are good markers.
the weight on the scale is like, it's just one small piece of a huge puzzle, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's not the end all be all of who you are. Like, it's literally like this tiny, tiny, tiny piece. Yeah. Like, it should not matter that much.
Yeah. Oh, Brittany, this has been fantastic. And I love that you shared your story. And I love that your background and experience. Like, I think that that is phenomenal that we have people. Like, I feel like that was me. You know, I was going to go to PT school, and my next step was graduate school. And I went totally different route with makeup, you know, and then now full circle coming back, which is so weird, but I love every bit of it, you know? And I'm so happy that you got to share this with today. And everybody, all your information, if you want to train with Brittany, if you want to follow her, she's out of Untamed Strength in Sacramento area. Yeah. I love that gym. Like, it just, I don't know. There's such a good vibe there. Like, I've never been there, but I'm like, oh, I'd totally love to train there.
Oh, if you're ever in Sacramento, it is a great gym.
Okay. I might have to make a trip out there, because I have to go back to California soon. Because we do some business out there, my mom and I, and that's why we were in Sacramento. And I was like, oh, I haven't been in a while. So yeah, if I do, I'm gonna hit you up.
Yes, definitely.